He's all right. Okay. Welcome, folks, to our final class call for Module 10. It's always interesting to see how many people we've still got going. So fun. So fun. But it's really, really nice to see you all. Okay. So today we're going to do some, just talk about some admin for our kind of end of program, what comes next. And then we'll get into revisiting goals, and then we'll talk a bit more about kind of wrapping up and looking at behavioral change generally. Yeah. So let me share my screen. Okay. Oops. So just to let you know what happens now. So next week we've got our closing circle. At the usual time, so 10 a.m., 5 p.m. UK time. And you will need to do some prep for that. So the reason that we even have a closing circle is you'll probably find this either something you experience or your clients experience. But in our culture, we're not great at endings. We do not like endings. We kind of ghost, or we suddenly have something else to do, or anything can come up, and you're like, oh great, that gets me out of that. It may not even be a conscious choice. I know I was certainly very good at the old what we call over here the Irish exit, where you just kind of disappear quietly and don't tell anyone you're going. I have seen endings done really well, and it totally changed my experience of endings. It also changed my experience of how I complete with clients. And what you'll probably find is that your clients also feel trepidatious, emotional, uncertain, sometimes angry at what happens to them emotionally when they complete working with you. You being able to get at one with endings is going to make that experience so much kinder for both of you. So I just want to share with you how I do this with my clients. We're going to do it together. You will need to prepare a little bit for it, because everyone gets to speak, and you don't want to be doing that kind of on the fly. It always feels a bit awkward and weird. So please know that you'll just need to spend maybe 20 minutes just beforehand, just reflecting. But it does mean that you get to kind of say what you need to say, and there is a sense of the intention behind that is that there is a real sense of completion for you and for everyone else. Okay. So look out for some guidance on that. On the 14th of November, which is 2 weeks later, we have a certification session at this time, so 5 p.m. UK time. On Tuesday, the 14th of November, I'm going to take you through the whole certification process. You can ask all your questions. We'll figure it out together. You'll get a sense of like what's expected and why, how this benefits you, what it looks like for you. And that's just a good session, I think, to come to if you plan to certify. Okay. So that is now in the online calendar. So if you have subscribed to the calendar, it will also be in your calendar, which is cool. Any questions on either of those sessions? Are you good? All clear? Yeah? Okay. So today we're just going to revisit the aims of this module around goals. And then we're going to talk a bit more broadly about the change cycle, behavioral change, what that looks and feels like. And I also wanted to spend a little bit of time just kind of using that change cycle as a vehicle, if you like, for helping you see how you can bring the program that you've just kind of been through into a really coherent coaching offer for your clients. So we're looking at the two different parts of the Module 10 workbook. Yeah. There's also going to be time for your questions generally. There's time for all of that too. Okay. So, the whole point of this module is to sort of subvert our usual or kind of mainstream understanding of what it means to achieve a goal, right? Most of us have been kind of experienced or maybe even being trained to think that we sort of have a start point and an end point, and we just kind of beat ourselves up to get there. And actually, if you take away the time frame and the linear nature of that kind of goal, you get a much more compassionate and successful and also more trauma-informed approach to goals, right? That you just remove the need for it to be right, which for your clients who tend to procrastinate or have perfectionist tendencies can be a huge relief, right? There's no right way to do this. And, you know, any action I take counts can be massively reassuring. Yeah. And so the other part of this is that we just expect that self-doubt's going to show up. So rather than kind of white-knuckling your way through and hoping that it all goes perfectly well, we just go, oh, well, this is self-doubt showing up. Any resistance, any, you know, ways that we hold ourselves back, any time we might be in self-judgment around what we're not doing, it's all resistance. It's all related to the way we're trying to protect ourselves from failing or from getting it wrong or being disappointed, all of that jazz. So we plan for that and we, you know, kind of expect that there'll be challenges along the way. It starts to make the goal process less about doing the right things and more about the way we're doing anything. And that's because the sort of meta purpose of any goal, right, is about who the client is wanting to become, right? Who, the expansion of their self-concept, of their sense of who they are, what's possible for them. So literally who they become along the way, that's the bit that matters. If you've ever coached anyone who has had a massive goal and then some sort of force majeure incident has happened, an act of God, and they can't do the last bit, but they don't care because they've become the person who can do the last bit. That's kind of the kind of goal we want for people, right? I'm just thinking of a client who broke their ankle the week before a marathon. And I was like, ah, who cares? I've already run a marathon. I did it in my training. That's what I wanted to do, right? So I was like, yeah, I'm disappointed, but I'm not devastated, because I've already become a person who can do this, right? So it's that kind of, you know, that kind of self-belief that comes from that. I already know it's inevitable that I can do this. That's the goal, the real goal. And so, you know, all of this comes back to, I think, what is quite a helpful sort of phrase to remember, that we're advocating for the client's growth, not their goals. And that can be super helpful to remember, particularly if you do get kind of excited about your client's goals and they become a little bit of a reflection of who you are. It's a good way to recognize, oh, whoops, I'm a bit invested, right? Because I'll be super disappointed if they don't achieve this. Somehow that will mean something about me or my coaching, right? So we're interested in their growth, not necessarily their goal. It also means that for clients who maybe change their minds or decide at some point that this isn't the goal for them or they want to do something different, that the relationship between you is preserved, because there isn't that sense that somehow they're letting you down as well. Yeah. So I just want to pause there for a second. I just want to check in around, have you had an opportunity to play with courage-based goals yourself? Have you started that process? What are you learning? What are you sharing? What do you want to share about that? Any questions you have? What's happening? Has anyone played with the process or started a goal for themselves?
I'm still working on the, you know, the goal you gave us for a posting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've done one so far.
Nice.
But I've got, like, I'm putting my ideas down. So I'm like, tomorrow is my day of like, okay, I'm going to do these posts and I'm going to get them out before the end of the month. So I've kind of been playing with it, but not as in like diving into module 10.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. What are you what's coming up for you as you're just playing with it?
A little bit of too many ideas.
Nice.
Like, yeah. So it's a nice problem to have. I've got to kind
Great
of just
problem
like
to have.
Narrow it down a bit and go, okay, what is it I'm really trying to say?
Yeah.
So I've got, you know, I'm doing mind maps and word maps and all sorts.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And I'm curious to know, Colette, like, usually, like, if you've done this kind of thing before, if you've sort of got into that, like, that editorial calendar type approach to things, what has maybe stopped this from being a habit in the past?
I don't use an editorial calendar or anything. I just like do it on the fly. I just like
right. Yeah.
I just post a picture and put something with it and hope for the best. But I feel it's always been around, you know, holidays or dogs or flowers or whatever.
Yeah.
Never about me and my business.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the change, really.
Yeah.
And I have done one post and it kind of felt okay. It was like, oh, okay. Yeah, I can go with this. So now I'm going to, you know, kind of keep going with it.
Yeah, cool. Love it. Love it. Do you think that in the past you anticipated something else happening, or like, what was the...
Yeah, I think that I was concerned that there wouldn't be an interest and there wouldn't, you know. And so it was interesting. The first post I just did like a little introduction to me and what I do, because a lot of people kind of have a vague idea of what I do, but not all of it. And immediately I got a message. It's like, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know. So
hang on a second. So let me get this straight. You told people what they do and invited them to contact you, and someone contacted you.
Yeah. Like what? within 15 minutes, I was like, whoa, hold on a minute.
Hang on. Well, this can't last. Oh, that's brilliant. I'm so glad.
So then for a little while, I sat in this place of, shit. I don't really know if I want this to explode. Because actually, you know, there's something about protecting that quiet life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's like, well, here we are. We're going.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting, right? Like, you get that great response. And then, oh my God.
Yeah.
All or nothing thinking kicks in. This can't explode. Yeah. It probably won't, just to reassure you. It probably won't. Right.
I haven't had anything since then.
Yeah. And the other part of this is, like, notice that, right? If you go from, in any kind of experiment, any kind of goal you do, once you start gaining momentum, that is often exactly what happens, is then we go, oh, it's too much, I've got to back away, rather than bringing in the healthy self to say, this is great, what can I do to support myself? You know, which is, you know, and my advice is always just putting my mentoring hat on. If you start getting lots of interest, put them on a waiting list.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't ever want to turn anyone away.
Yeah.
It's like, if even if you get full of capacity, you can say to someone, hey, I'm not going to be taking on any clients for the next couple of months, but I'd love to keep you on a waiting list and let you know as soon as I have availability. Would that be okay?
Yeah. I think what I need to really work out for myself is, how busy do I want to be, really? And then I can go, okay, that means X amount of sessions and off we go.
Yeah, perfect. That's like real leadership, right? Like, deciding for yourself. What is, you know, what is the capacity I have? How many clients do I want to work with?
Yeah.
It's amazing. And, you know, all I would say is make the decisions early. Like, and this is, I'm embarrassed to share this, but I'm just going to be real. My waiting list got so big, I was having panic attacks.
Because
I knew that I could not serve all those people. And I would literally wake up at 2 a.m. and go, fuck, what am I going to do? Because I felt exhausted. I was working too hard and I had too many people on my waiting list. and I didn't know really what to do. It took me an embarrassing amount of time to work with a coach who helped me figure it out. So it's like
when things get too much, what I can't hang on to people. I can't, like, I know when I'm hanging, I've got all my clients, and then when it gets really busy and I'm doing a little bit too much, it's like I can't hang on to them all. So I have to have more supervision, and then, you know, and then it calms down a bit and I go, okay, let's learn from that. So
yeah, it's so, and I think this is the thing that is so great, is when you stay in relationship with the thing you want, right, you get to know, oh, what are the signs that it's gone, you know, too far? What, how do I then support myself? Like, rather than staying in the place of, well, I won't take any action until I can kind of sort all of that out. Like, you can keep moving forward, keep doing the thing, staying in relationship with it, trusting yourself that you'll figure something out, right? You can ask for help. You can ask for support. There are places you can go to get that, and you'll be able to figure it out. There'll be a solution. Yeah. Amazing. So cool. Love it.
Thanks.
Yeah. It's amazing what happens when we tell people. I always say, like, that my strategy has always been just basically tell people that I do this work. And then if they go, oh, that sounds like something I need, do you want to get on a call and have a chat about it then? And then I'll say, do you want to work with me? Here's how much it is. Here's what we do. Here's what you can expect. And most of the times they've said, yeah, that sounds really good. I really need that. So it has been the most unstrategic strategy. And, but this is how, you know, I think all the time, I think about therapists and, you know, folks who have worked in the helping professions for decades and decades and decades, way before there was even an internet, and they had a sustainable business, you know, full kind of complement of clients. And that spread through word of mouth, networking, letting people know that's what they do, people handing around their numbers. And, you know, that's entirely, you know, a great way to have a business, right? I know several coaches who've been doing this long term who, you know, do not have social media presence, that they build their business exactly through that kind of referral process. And every now and then they'll sort of pop up and say, hi, I'm looking for clients. But most of the time they're so under the radar. And I mean, that's for folks who, you know, don't love, you know, creating content, faffing about on Canva for half a day, then that's perfect, right? So it's like we can figure out what works for us, you know? Yeah, really cool. Amazing. So I really do recommend that you play with this goals process. And you know, just so you know, because a couple of people have joined Self-Belief School from this class, and I just wanted to let you know, like, I coach the Muggles in Self-Belief School, and that is basically me coaching around all of these tools. And I've just added in a bonus program called Brave Hearts, and it's for business owners. And what we're going to do before Christmas is take the courage-based planning process and spend 6 weeks working on a business goal. And it's like no content, it's just coaching and co-working. That's all we're doing. So for folks who want that kind of support, I just wanted to mention that, and you can find out more info on my website. But yeah, so, you know, just know that this is, for me, this is like a real everyday practice that I use all the time with my clients. And people love it because it's like, oh, I don't have to do this perfectly. I can just stay in action. It's great. It's really cool. So I do recommend that you experiment with this, see what happens for you, notice your self-doubt will come up, and expect that to happen. And then, you know, you can use that workbook to sort of look at, oh, what are the setbacks and challenges that I'm experiencing, because they're almost inevitable. And I've split those out into kind of the sort of over-functioning and under-functioning type setbacks that people will come across. So you can start to kind of play with this and see how it applies to you, to your clients, all of that jazz. Yeah. Okay, so The second half of this module is about giving you a sort of overview generally of change, of making a change in our lives, because that's kind of what we're in the business of, right? Usually people come to us because they've had a change imposed on them and they are figuring that out, or they want to make a change in their lives and they need some help to do that. So I just thought it might be fun to kind of have a little bit of a chat about, you know, what does it mean to make a change? Like, if you think about the shifts or changes that you've either had imposed on you or that you have chosen in your life, like why do that? Like, what has that been like for you? How would you describe your experience of change? Who wants to start? I love how chatty this group is. Makes my job so easy. Funny. Yeah, Tina, bless you.
I'm the person that I hate, like, downtime. So I'll jump in with stuff that doesn't matter. But anyway, I guess for me, self-imposed change and then like change imposed upon me that I have to learn to deal with.
Yeah.
That's how I think of it.
Yeah. And I'm curious, like, if you think about a big change you've made in your life or you've been subject to, what comes to mind for you?
I think the ones that I've chosen has been small steps that I didn't think matter, but I just embedded it into my life.
Right.
And the ones imposed upon me, it's that, I don't know, I guess that whole quote of it just takes time. So I guess that's the common denominator, is just time in both places.
Yeah. Cool. Anyone else want to share? What does it mean to you when you think about change and what that has meant for you? What's that involved? Okay. Yeah.
This is interesting. I've probably like wholesale reinvented my life a shocking number of times for my age. And I think I have like a pretty positive relationship to that, in part because my parents have had like three legacy careers where they totally reinvented themselves.
Right. Cool.
And so I just like had a certain like pretty high degree of change modeled for me, and I think learned that it is just like part of life, like it's just a part of, and so I find it in some, the flip side of that is that sometimes smaller and more sustained change is more difficult for me, because I think that like if it's not a big sort of overwhelming transformation, then it doesn't, not that it doesn't count, but it's almost like harder to bring things down from the macro level to the micro level for me. Sometimes I can really see something if it's like a total transformation.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more difficult to connect to things that are like more bite-sized.
That's quite interesting to me, Adrian. I think that's really interesting. So how does that maybe translate with your clients?
In terms of how I show up as a coach?
Yeah, like if you're all about the macro and they're struggling with the micro. I'm just curious if you've noticed.
Yeah. Well, I definitely, that's interesting. I will say that I have probably like attracted people who are like, I want to change the entire fabric of my life.
Right.
For sure. But I think that it's actually, I don't know. I, you know how sometimes like when you have a certain degree of objective distance and no skin in the game in a thing, it's a lot easier for me with that third person perspective to be like, oh, but then how would that happen, and like if we could bring it down to today or tomorrow or whatever time scale, it's a lot easier for me to do with somebody else.
Cool.
Because I don't actually have to come up with the answer.
Nice. Yeah. Cool. Anyone else want to share? Yeah, Tina.
Well, and to add to that, Adrian, that's something I work with my clients too. It's a tool, zooming in and zooming out, because you can tell when they're too lost in this big vision and they don't know what to do tomorrow. So then you say, okay, let's zoom in and focus on tomorrow. And then sometimes we're too micro-focused here and we forget, why are we doing this? You know, yeah. So that's a good tool to tap into.
Yeah. Love that. Yeah, that perspective. And for me, that really does fit with self-trust, right? Like that ability to kind of do that I sort of call it mouse eye vision or eagle eye vision, you know, like, where are you? Are you in the weeds or are you up in the sky looking at the whole thing? And yeah, it's kind of good to sort of sit on the horizon sometimes and go, what's going on here? What's this requiring of me? But it can be really, kind of enlivening for a client to work with someone like you, Adrian, who can see the big picture. And that if they are a bit like stuck in the weeds and you're like, dude, that's the least of your worries, right? Like, you can help them to kind of think a bit bigger and maybe see a bit further ahead. It can be great. Yeah. Yeah. Love it. Great point, Tina. Yeah. Anyone else want to share? If any of you have been through change and you just thought, I think this might end me, it's a lot. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that I would just also offer is, and one of the things that, you know, Sal, you may remember this probably better than me, but one of the things that Martha Beck would talk about in her change cycle is that often at the beginning of a change, there is a kind of death. There's a sort of death of identity. Something gets shifted, like whether that is actually sometimes it's a literal death of a job or a relationship or a friendship or something, but some aspect of ourselves kind of ends in order for us to recalibrate and make sense of the change. Martha uses a really cool analogy actually of the caterpillar turning into the butterfly, that's her kind of metaphor for the change. And it's kind of fun when you realize like the science behind that is the caterpillar doesn't go into a cocoon and then grow wings. It actually reduces to its most kind of basic cells, the imago cells, and it's kind of goo. So if you opened a chrysalis, you wouldn't see like little legs and wings there. It would just be goo. And I think there is some real like benefit to reassuring clients who are in that kind of death rebirth stage of change that it's, you know, it's okay to wrap yourself in a blanket and have the furniture hold you for a little bit. Like that goof stage is like the who the hell am I and what do I do with myself kind of stage. So any of Martha's books, but I think Steering by Starlight is probably, or the North Star one is probably a good one to look at for that kind of thing. But I'd also really recommend if you love the kind of the process of change, if that really gets you and you work with people who are at a kind of crossroads. The other book I'd really recommend, it's inherently readable and beautifully written, is William Bridges' book, Transitions. It's about 40 years old now, but he writes a lot about how in lots of Indigenous cultures, there is ritual and ceremony and mentors that kind of take you through those sort of age and stage changes. And in Western culture, we don't really do that. We all sort of like go, oh, they're going through something, and kind of leave them to it, you know. So he writes a lot about the real discombobulation of when you've maybe left some part of yourself behind and you haven't quite claimed the new you yet. And it's just so reassuring. I remember reading that book, gosh, a while ago now, and I sort of felt like all different, but like you, Adrian, all different parts of my life were sort of in various stages of flux, and I was a bit like just barely hanging on, and it was really reassuring. So that kind of story can be great as well for clients who are just like, is this normal? Am I going to be okay? You know, just that reassurance that you will come through. You will come through the change, and the more support we get, you know, I mean, I think that's something to really take from this and from Bridges' book, is you know, our clients don't have the ritual, the ceremony, the mentorship, the support. They do have life coaches, which is, you know, we get to sort of play that role of a sort of trusted guide to say, yep, you're going on a vision quest and it's probably going to be a bit shit for a while, and I'm right here with you. You know, it's going to be okay. We will get to the other side of the big ravine. And that can be really supportive. Yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed that book, Adrienne. It's a real winner. I think it's so great. Yeah, Tina.
Something I noticed in my life and I've seen with my clients and so confusing is when they have that death of who they were, whether they chose it or not, you know, and maybe they have a positive outcome or whatever, the people around them have trouble accepting the new them, even if the change is making them happy. And actually, especially so if they seem happier, their circle really does sometimes have to change out as they change.
Yeah. I think you're right. There is something about and it makes total sense when you think about it from a risk perspective. Like, we often don't make changes because we fear we will then separate from the people that are around us, right? So we kind of, you know, it's that very much that forming self-concept. And when you actually do form your own and go, oh, this is me and this feels amazing to me, and the people around you are like, we want the old you. We like that part of you. And that's no longer feels like it matches, then that can lead to quite a lot of loss as well. Quite a lot of loss and grief sometimes with that ending. Yeah. I know I've worked over the years with a lot of women who've gone through divorce and separation, and they found that really quite jarring, you know, to have, you know, that ender, or the relationship ends through whatever reason. But then there is this adjustment to, oh, and not only did I lose that relationship, I lost our wider circle as well. Or I lost the kind of connection with family, and now I'm navigating all the other stuff that comes with it, the co-parenting, and then there's the in-law grandparents, and it's a lot. So all to say, like, changes, even small changes, I found can, depending on where the client is coming from and their experience of change, whether they've had a lot in their life or, you know, it's the first big thing that's happened, it can, you know, that feeling of just being dislodged from your life can feel quite disruptive, or it can feel like, oh, I'm just, you know, I need some support to figure this out. Sometimes it can be a doorway into a bigger reflection on, you know, who am I now? And what does this kind of, where is this taking me? How do I want to show up for this change? All to say, it's an interesting topic to reflect on for yourself, like how comfortable you are with change in your life. What does it mean to you to go through change? How might that kind of bleed into the relationship you have with clients who may be struggling with it or finding it frustrating, are impatient to get to the other side, all of that jazz. Something to reflect on. Yeah. You know, one of the things I wanted to kind of talk to you about is this model that I've included in Module 10. And it's a framework from Prochaska and De Clemente around kind of generally how we change. The reason I think it's super helpful is because, to me, it kind of encompasses, even though it's overly simplistic and all of these kind of frameworks really are, it's like, what? It doesn't happen like that. So yes, there are six nice, neat, in order kind of stages, but obviously that it doesn't really happen like that. I find the metaphor of a labyrinth quite helpful, because I think sometimes that is sort of more like what it feels like. You're a bit kind of wibbly wobbly and all over the place. And yes, you have to keep walking forward. It's not like a maze where you're deliberately confused. You do just keep walking forwards, but it can be disorienting. You can feel like you're getting it wrong. So if we use the kind of metaphor of a labyrinth and then sort of lay that on top of Prochaska's model, it can be quite helpful to think about how change ends up happening. So they talk about the spiral and of moving from pre-contemplation around to contemplating a change, preparing for it, taking action, maintaining it, and then relapsing. So these stages don't necessarily happen in order. The reason I quite like this model, apart from the fact that it's got a shit ton of evidence that it's a really helpful way of looking at change generally, and there aren't many good behavioral change models out there. But what I like about this one is that it includes the stuff that I see all the time, which is this pre-contemplation and contemplation stage. And I think for those of us who are building a practice and wanting to attract more clients, this is something that is really worth paying attention to, right? Because the clients that are in this pre-contemplation, contemplation stage are probably aware of you or in the field of awareness of coaching and support, but they aren't yet invested in any one kind of relationship, coaching relationship, therapeutic relationship. So these are the folks that you're probably speaking to maybe in a newsletter or on social media or in your conversations. They're sort of in your book club or they work with your sister. It's that kind of like network of people, right? And usually they when they move from pre-contemplation to contemplation, they are in a state of, I think I need some help, but I'm not sure what to do. And if you can have, you know, conversations with folks around how you help people, like Colette sending out a social media message, hey, this is who I help and how, get in touch. Like committing to really talking to those people all the time, that is, I think this is the thing that a lot of kind of marketing sort of misses. Like it's not so much about your work that you want to be communicating so much as their experience, right? I see you. Here's how I help, right? This is why you're not crazy. You know, I just posted something today about you're not cursed or crazy. Like this is why it feels shit, you know, at its general idea of a post. And I've had a lot of people kind of message me and go, this, you're speaking to me, like, what do I do now kind of thing? And it's like, great, let's have a chat, you know? So this is the thing to be thinking about. I think if you are in that place of wanting to attract more clients, sign more people on, enroll your people, is to really pay attention to the kinds of folks you want to work with and what are they thinking, feeling, what are they saying to themselves or to other people, what are they doing or not doing at that stage of pre-contemplation and contemplation? What's going on for them? What's their experience? What do they maybe need to hear? If you are the kind of person who, like me, your client is you, but maybe in a bit of time ago, then you may remember for yourself, oh, that's what that was like, right? What did I need to hear then, right? What did I need to hear when I was sitting in my corporate job and, you know, watching black mold kind of make its way up the wall of my public sector building office and thinking, is this what it's amounted to, right? Like, what did I need to hear back then? What did I need to hear when I was in the relationship that didn't, you know, spark any joy, or I was living in the town that didn't match me? What do I need to hear? So that as the person is contemplating their change, and we can help them, you know, let them know, you don't have to feel ready. You just have to know where it is you're going, what it is you want, even if it's not this, right? That's the thing to kind of communicate to people around, you know, what is it that they need to hear? So all to say, like in module 10 in that workbook, I sort of take you through the stages of the change model and what what kind of tools you can use in from the SBCA curriculum to really help people to figure out if they want to work with you, but also once they do work with you, how you can support them, right? So as your clients sign up and are starting to work with you, you're going to spend a lot of time in this kind of side of the change cycle, in the contemplation, preparation, action stage, and they'll go around in the cycles there, right? And this can be, you know, in this preparation, contemplation, preparation, action stage, it's very much, you know, the first part of the program where we were looking at, you know, why do you have these beliefs about yourself and your life? You know, where did they come from? Let's map those out. Let's look at your life map. Let's look at your archetypes of self-doubt. Where have these beliefs come from? They haven't just been invented in a vacuum. So giving people that sense of, you know, both your self-doubt makes sense, and also what you want is possible. We can get to some version of that. So, you know, thinking about things like your vision, envisioning, so the real sovereign stuff around what is it that you want your life to look like? What is it that this change represents for you? And all of that is really just in service of helping them to make sense of who are they in this process, right? And then, you know, as they're taking action, as they're experimenting and trying things out, then what does that look like? Like, what needs to happen? What support do they need? Maybe it's all about boundaries or figuring out all of the parts of themselves that are involved, right? Where their self-doubt's popping up a lot, let's get under the skin of that protector and see what it's made of, right? So you start to see that wherever a client is coming into this cycle, and whatever they find easy or hard, I've got something that I can support them with. I can help them feel resourced. Yeah. The thing that I've also found is that if you're working with people over time, you also start to see their the ways that they will kind of let their goals either fizzle out, or they'll quit on themselves, or they'll change their mind and things like that. You start to really get to know where your clients might need extra support, like those, I don't love this word of relapse, but where those old kind of protective patterns might be coming up, and how you can support them to say, hey, I see you. I see what's going on here. Are we changing this goal because that feels really good to you? Or are we changing it because you're getting to the stage where you've almost achieved it and that's freaking you out a bit? Right. So you start to really get to, you know, understand and support your clients in whatever stage of the change cycle that they're at. So I just want to pause there and just check in with you around, you know, that model, any questions you might have about your clients in particular, perhaps messaging, perhaps questions you have generally around that change cycle model and how that applies to coaching. Yeah, Sal.
In the study group last week, we were talking about the tools, and now that we have gone the full gamut and know everything, Scott was talking about how, and you'd already said this, that we can start at any point, and often clients would be coming to us with a goal, but it's really self-belief that we're going to be. But I don't really have a well-formed question, but just a sense of. And I know I still need to watch the recording. Tina had said that the the workshop you did recently was really helpful to see you speaking to muggles to see the difference. So I think my question is sort of just some insight or sense of, maybe I know the answer, but sort of that segue of a client coming in. For me, it'd be a client in their 50s starting a business. So it is quite specific, but I know from my experience as a client, I remain fully goop. The analogy, I'm staying firmly holding on to all my bits of personality and damned if I'm going to put the butterfly wings on. So I've realized that a lovely business coach I'm working with, I'm not a fit because and she's so wonderful, but I'm staying firmly in goop. So sort of how you would segue with a client who thinks it's all about what's next but never takes these steps.
Love it. Perfect question, Sal, because this is what happens, right? Is that clients will sign up because they think they're further around the change cycle than they possibly actually are in reality. And, you know, I think we as coaches do this because we're optimistic by nature. Most of us, some of us are on the darker goth side of things, but I'm holding on to my group too. So what I would offer, Sal, is I think that a client who's coming to you because they're in their 50s and they want to start a business, they've either done this before and they kind of know what to expect, right? So in many ways, this ain't their first rodeo around that cycle. Or this is a new thing and they're segueing and bringing all of their experience and skills into a new arena kind of thing.
And that's the second, I think it would be the second client that it would be, this is a brand new thing, but it's going to trigger shit you didn't even know. It's going to trigger stuff that will feel familiar, but not in this new arena.
Yeah. And I think the goal is the goal, right? They want to start this business. They want to be running a business. There's something about that desire that is sparking them, that they're willing to invest in working with you. They're willing to take a punt on themselves and on this idea they have. It's a beautiful thing, and we want to help them get there. I think what will often happen is it's almost like two things are going on at once. There is this, all I see is the kind of, this will work, and I'll work really hard to make this happen. And often the feeling that they're experiencing most of the time is kind of a version of fear or anxiety. They're like constantly kind of questioning themselves. So what I would say is it kind of doesn't matter if the client is coming in with that dominating, i.e. I'm always questioning myself and I kind of don't understand why I need to sort that out before I can do the business. Or if they're coming in with the goal is the goal is the goal and I just need to get rid of all these parts of me that keep wanting to shit on my goal. Your ability to meet them, either of those two kind of start points, is going to be incredibly helpful. Right? Because for the client who has the goal, it's like, well, let's assume that you also get to figure out all of these beliefs that come up that are very understandable. Like, you think there's something wrong because you're going, oh, I've over-delivered to this new client and what do I do now? It's like, well, this is fantastic information about boundaries and what's okay and not okay for you and all of that jazz, right? And the beliefs that go with it. Whereas if they're coming to you with, I can't sell to a client because I don't trust myself to not over deliver. It's like, well, let's take some experimental steps forward and see what happens. Knowing that you've got a way to figure this out, we can do some planning beforehand. So you've got a bit of a script for yourself. Like, what do you need to stay in motion? Right. So all to say, like, I think those two kind of start points for each client, you're going to be able to support them. And actually talking to both of those people could be a really great way to also say, hey, I see you, business owner, in that pre-contemplation phase.
So helpful. Thank you.
You're so welcome. One of the things I said in my post today is, you know, often we think about running a business is, you know, we're just creating beautiful products or we're offering really helpful services. But actually what we're doing is going against everything that we've been told that keeps us safe. Right. So we're going to make all these freaking decisions and then trust ourselves and receive money. And, you know, all of that stuff is just really activating. It's not, you know, it's not in your mind, but also you heal that stuff up. Not only do you have the business that you're looking for, but you actually feel really good in the process.
That's what I want to sell. That.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Combination. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you.
So great. And Colette, you had your hand up as well.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I mean, most of my clients are younger, but I do work with a few adults. And I kind of feel like I'm getting into this place where the kids are going off to uni and then the parents are going, or one or other of them are going, maybe now it's time to change, try that thing, you know. But it's like, so I guess my question is about, how do you get people over the worry of the finance? Like stepping out of a job that's salaried every month to go, this is really what I want to do. And I know I can do it, but it's fucking scary.
Yeah.
So, and there's a risk.
Yeah.
So how do you deal with that?
Yeah. So it would depend on the client, right? Because some clients will be really risk adverse, but actually they are pretty financially sweet, right? So it's not really about the money, but the money is the thing that's front facing because that's where security is for them.
And that's really interesting. You're right. Yeah.
Right. And for other clients, they're like, I'll figure it out. Like the money has never been the thing. It's something else. Like, what will people think if I leave my nice job and go off and, I don't know, I had one woman who left a really nice consulting job because she'd learned how to whittle walking sticks. Oh, and God. She was like, oh, I could do a sideline and wands, you know. And, you know, her whole, like, family were just like, this, we need to sort of, you know, intervene here. Anyway,
I want her number.
Very cool. She lives in Bath. So what I would say is it kind of depends on the client. And I think sometimes the thing about the risk is that the client will often present with the sort of, you know, acceptable risk rather than the vulnerable one, right? So it's the money rather than, actually, I don't know if I can do this. If this moves out of possibility and into something that's quite real, then I've got to be with, like, all the things sales clients are working through, right? Who am I? Can I do this? Boundaries, all of that shit comes up, right?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Yeah.
And I'd also say, like, when it comes to folks who are going through a change where they are kind of in charge of it, where they're leading the change, really pay attention to where they might be getting stuck in a bit of all or nothing. I see this with coaches particularly all the time where, you know, and we've all been there, right? You sort of fall in love with the work and you're like, freaking hell, this is amazing. I can't believe I get to do this. And then it's like, right, I'm going to leap out of the plane because apparently a parachute will appear. And actually, that is a total myth. And maybe a gentler way is to go part-time or reduce to 4 days a week or maybe build your practice up on the side and just see if you like it, actually, working on your own and, you know, doing this kind of work before you set fire to the rest of your career, you know? So it's all of that kind of like, you know, maybe there is a transition period, you know, maybe there is that I haven't quite left my old identity and I haven't quite claimed my new one yet. What does that middle part look like? What's possible for you in there? It might be a little bit messy, but actually that might feel safer than cutting off and trying something new straight away.
And I guess that messy, stepping into that messiness might be the thing they need to go, nah, I don't really like this, I'm going to go.
Yeah. I think anything that we can do to encourage clients to see that period of, you know, sort of like action and learning and, you know, trying stuff again, that experimental period of when you're kind of in that middle part of change, You know, to be a bit gentle on yourself, it's quite exhausting to be constantly doing things that you're unpracticed at, right? Like, it does take a lot of emotional energy, mental energy. You kind of have to believe in something before it's here yet, and that's, you know, that's quite a complex dance, especially if you've got other people going, what the hell are you doing leaving your consulting job to make wands? Other questions, comments, ideas? Yeah, Tina.
There is a type of client from taking this class. I know now they have low self-trust, and I haven't had many of them, but they really do look to me to tell them their right answer. And it is so much responsibility. They always kind of make me a little bit nervous. And it's such a hard, I just wonder if you have that client that they really don't trust they have the right answer and they're seeking, what can you really do to bring them back? Or, you know, I don't know. It's nerve wracking as a coach that they actually think I would know.
Yeah. Right. Like, and I would say if you're feeling that, you could say that to them. Right. Like, sometimes just naming the thing that we're experiencing can be freeing for both of you.
Yeah.
Right. You think I know, right? Yeah. How would I know? And then it's like, it's okay not, because the message that you're really sending is, it's okay not to know.
Right.
But what might we do? You know, and sometimes I'll do something a bit fun, like, who's someone that you admire who's done this, or what's the quality you think you need to be able to do this? What do you need more of? Who do you know that is that person? Might be someone in their lives, might be someone famous, but it's like, you know, can you borrow a bit of them? Right? What do you think they would do? It's almost like it sounds a bit funny, but it's a way of sort of separating the person. Like, I have to come up with this. No, I'm going to give that job to Dwayne The Rock Johnson because he always gets to know what to do, right? And you're exactly right. It does make people laugh. And then they can kind of, like, you know, they relax a little bit into it, and it becomes a little less fraught and a little bit like, not only do I not know what to do, but I now have to come up with the answer in this coaching session kind of thing.
It gives them material to draw from too. So it's not just solely from them, but something that they like Dwayne The Rock Johnson because it reminds them of something they wish they had.
Yeah. And, you know, Jung talked about this, this process. He called it our golden shadows. That it's not, you know, how we have these shadows, these kind of parts of our unconscious that we wish we didn't have. Which we talked a little bit about in module 8 around those polarities, the things that we're like, nope, that's in the basement. We also have golden shadows, aspects of ourselves that we kind of wish we had, but we're not quite ready to claim. And so what we'll often do is admire other people who have those. And to me, that's always a little sign that that quality is emerging. Like, it's like if you think about all the parts of you that are on the love bus, right? There's a little part that's like Dwayne The Rock Johnson, you know, maybe at a real junior level, but a junior version, right? He's just sitting there going, yay! And it's like, you know, that part of you is there, right? It's just that it maybe has, that part hasn't really had anywhere to kind of grow or play. And so you're bringing that quality into your new thing that you're trying. You're letting it have a little bit of breathing room. And it can just be a little bit fun as well. I think anything that allows the client to relax a little bit and hold it lightly can help.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're so welcome. Yeah, and you know, you're reminding me as well, Tina, one of the things that a coach offered to me, my very first coach, when I was, you know, had done that thing of fallen in love with this work and thought, oh, but this can't actually be a job, right? I was working in a consulting role, quite well paid, and, you know, it was a nice, easy job to kind of share with people and no one judged you. Whereas if you say you were a life coach back then, it was a bit like, oh, shit, is that like a medium? Have you got a 0800 number? Anyway, she said you kind of need a talisman, like something that you can kind of see as a sort of representation of what you're building. And I chose an elephant, partly because I love the elephants. To me, are one of my kind of totem animals. I just feel like a real affinity with that very loving matriarchal community that feels right up my alley. But I also secretly thought, oh, I'm not going to see any elephants in central London, am I? So it was almost like a little, fuck you, universe, give me a sign. And let me tell you, there are like several cafes in London with massive murals on their walls of elephants. I would see stickers and art. And I was sitting on a tube once and a kid drew a picture of an elephant and held it up to me. And I almost burst into tears. I was like, it's a sign from the universe. This is happening. Right. So all to say, like, sometimes that can be super fun as well, is to like allow your big change that you're growing, you know, almost like give it to something that can hold it for you. You know, and you know, anyone who's been through sobriety will know that that's really a lot of what 12 step is about as well. You know, give this addiction to something else that can hold it for you, whether that is, you know, your version of God, or sometimes people will give it to a river or something like that, you know. So sometimes that can be a really supportive way for a client to go, okay, I'm just going to give it to this animal, this place, and when, you know, and I'm also going to be cognizant of that. You know, it's like, you know, if you want to buy a V-dub car and you're excited about it, you're going to see every V-dub on the road, right? So it does have that kind of bias, unconscious bias impact as well, which can be, you know, very sweet. And whether we call that a sign from the universe or it genuinely is, then it doesn't really matter, right? Because it gives us that lift of that sense that, oh, it's on its way. I can relax into this. Yeah. Yeah, Colette.
That just reminds me of a little story. A few years ago, we were going to buy an old VW camper, and we were having this big debate. Should we, shouldn't we? It's a big risk. It's like an old-fashioned one. It's probably going to break down all the time. We were talking to the kids. We were going somewhere, and they were going, oh, we think, yeah, maybe we should. We should just get on with it. And then we pulled up at a junction behind this car, and its number plate was yes. So it was just like, okay, let's do it.
It's so cool. I love it so much. Yeah, brilliant. I think this is the thing, right, is, you know, sometimes if I'm working with a client and they are a bit in that place, like you're describing, Tina, where can't quite make decisions, don't really trust myself, and I'm like, well, why do anything? Like, Sarah, why do anything? Because you don't have to, right? Many, many people will follow the script. You don't have to do anything. You can decide not to. But it's kind of like, isn't that why we're here? Like, isn't that, you know, the enlivenment of just doing something you want and seeing what happens? So, you know, taking a punt on yourself. That's kind of the juice of being here, right? And I think sometimes that can be quite invigorating. For some clients, it's like, well, maybe I shouldn't do it. But mostly, I think, you know, people who are investing in coaching, they also are like, yeah, there is more to this, right? Like, it isn't just pay the bills until you die. Like, it isn't. It just isn't. I want more than that, right? So we're always inviting them to be in choice and to feel resourced, to know that they have a choice. And I think, you know, part of this is, you know, it's a really gutsy thing, I think, to start a business in your 50s. Freaking hell, that's amazingly courageous, right? To make a change in your career, to wait till the kids leave and then go, right, it's our time, what are we going to do now, kind of thing. Like, this is the reason that we are here. So all of it is like, you know, I think our job there is very much about permission giving. Letting people see, you know, it's all right to have a big crazy dream, right? Yeah, Jane.
I don't necessarily have a question, but what I'm moving towards is offering a group program called The Art of Being Lost. That's basically like everything that you just kind of talked about, how we deal with that self-doubt, how we learn to trust ourselves, like the all those different parts and pieces, and the creative piece and the intuitive piece that I've kind of built my business on is tools that I use in there. But I've been silent in my business for like at least a year, maybe a year and a half. So I was going to start looking at my calendar and like all the kids stuff. I was going to start in either December or January with just like a free offer of new year, more me, and sort of rejecting that idea of like, you have to recreate yourself. You have to like go off that motivation of the new year and like do all these things, but kind of using that, I forget what it's called, the creative or the courage-based plan.
Perfect.
To kind of build that out.
You know, what I love about this so much, Shane, is it's kind of like I don't know what you might be making it mean that you've taken a year off out of your business or you've been quiet in your business, but you can also spin this as how mysterious. People must be wondering what I'm doing. And now you get to kind of reveal that, you know. There is that sort of thing of like, I've been lost for a year. Let me tell you about how beautiful that was and what that taught me and what I learned. And, you know, there is a real like powerful story that's very, you know, authentic to you. That is, I think that kind of thing is magnetizing for folks because you're not just talking about an idea. It's not like you've gone, oh, here's this thing I'm doing now. Like you have gone through this. So you're speaking from it. So that energy is really like, very genuine to you.
Yeah.
And it is, I always wonder like, oh, I wonder what they're up to. I always make shit up about people. Like, that's really good. I'm crap at gossip, but I'm like, oh, I wonder what they're doing. Maybe they won the lottery. They're living on some Greek island somewhere. You know, like, just have fun with it. So you can let this be like a really beautiful kind of, hey, guess what kind of thing, rather than the apology or the, you know,
yeah, which was definitely the energy I was holding about all of it. Cause you know, I was doing business wrong by not being consistent. So yeah, I love that reframe.
Oh my God. And if more business owners took a year, I know that's not possible for so many people, but took a year to get lost and, you know, work some shit out and then come and do their business, so much better. Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. It sounds so beautiful. I'm excited for you, Jane. Really cool. Yeah. And you know, I've been thinking a lot about this, particularly in the last couple of weeks, because the world is pretty crackers right now. And I think it can feel very heavy and dark, and there's so much uncertainty, and there's a lot of like, this really sad, you know, disruption energy in the air. And I think the tendency can be to want to either hide from that or sort of be absorbed in it, you know, that all or nothing thing. But I think there's something about like allowing yourself to be a bit disrupted by it. And like, yeah, because I want to be disrupted by that stuff. I don't want to sort of sit on the sidelines and not think about what it means to live in a world where leaders make those kinds of decisions that they're making right now. But I also think that can stir up something in people around, that's not who I want to be. I want to create the world that I want to live in. And I think that sort of, that feels to me like the undercurrent of a lot of the sorts of things that I'm seeing people talk about. Like, you know, we know that we can't rely on authority. Like hierarchical authority has no, you know, has very little bearing anymore. We've seen these systems for what they are. And so there is this kind of growing sense, I think, and I may be seeing what I want to see, but I do think there is a growing sense of, well, if not that, we can't go back. So what are we building? And, you know, isn't it true that all of it kind of matters? So therefore what I'm building really matters. What my clients are building really matters. So there's something about, I think, tapping into that that is super important right now. It's hopeful, I think, for folks to be like, I want to do something with all of this grief and anger and frustration and sense of, you know, that my agency has been taken away from me. So what can we do as practitioners to help folks claim that back and create a life that does feel really good? Now I'm on my soapbox. What have you done, Jane? So excited. Yeah. Brilliant. It sounds really good. Sounds really good.
Well, I do have one more question, and this might just be more a matter of like timing. So learning your archetypes and your model was really helpful. I had also created this thing using archetypes that were like guides and doing a lot of visualization practices with those. And there's overlap that I've kind of sorted through. Will there be a point maybe with like the certification or something where I can get some feedback on like how I'm envisioning that they overlap, but using my work with some of the new information that I've learned from you?
Sure. Maybe you and I can have a chat about that. Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe let's do that. That might be easier. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, fab. Really cool.
Thank you.
Cool. Anyone else for any questions, comments, ideas, shares? Okay, cool. So what we'll do is meet up next week for our closing. Then we'll have, I think, a week or two, and then we'll do our certification catch up. And then basically from November, you'll be invited to all of the supervision and support calls. We have these once a month. They're at the same times as the class, but on the last Thursday of the month. We'll also move you over to the graduate site and send you all fancy certificates and all of that shiz. It means that you'll have access to the graduate calendar and all of that. You'll also still have access to all of the recordings from all the classes from this class. So all of that will be there for you. So I'll be in your inbox in the next day or so just to give you some guidance around the closing circle. Do come along to that, particularly if you do feel a bit wobbly about endings. That can be quite an important process for folks. And, you know, the discussion forum will move over to the graduate site as well, and you can use that at any time to get in touch. We'll talk more. We'll talk more next week about all of that jazz. Yeah. Okay. Really cool. All right, loves. Well, I will see you next week. Take care of yourselves. And, yeah, thanks for tonight. It was really fun to chat. All right. Okay.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.